Really?
This is it?
But that's by your comfort.
The Health and Human Service Reform Committee will come to order. We are lacking a quorum at the moment, and so we will, with just one more to come in for that, we will start with proceedings on House File 3734, Representative Pearson. We can't move the bill at this point, but if you want to start your testimony, that would be great.
Well, thank you, Chair Schumacher, and to start with, I do want to touch on something that, for clarity, is rather important, I think, because it's the very first word is Olmstead, and in this circumstance, we are not talking about the Olmstead plan, so that's a typo in the fact that they've spelled it with S-T-E-A-D. So this is Olmstead County, and at this point, we're also probably seeing that amended on the Senate side, because we will have Project Legacy standing on its own as a 501c3. They actually are recognized as that for now as well. So with that point of clarity that I just wanted to get out of the way, I did want to just give folks a brief background on the state's beginning participation in Project Legacy. In my first term, our governor had expressed interest in helping out disparate communities and focusing and targeting some funding to different categories. And when that had happened, Senator Senjum and a few other legislators were talking about, well, what strong, good programs are out there that we can focus on. And Project Legacy came to our attention at that time, and that's really where this has stemmed from. I'm proud to say that all four of the delegation members from bipartisanly from Olmstead County have signed on to this bill, and we're very pleased to have Senator Senjum sponsoring the bill on the Senate side. And today I've brought along some testifiers that can give you a quick background of Project Legacy itself and the good work that they do.
All right, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Hi, my name is Karen Edmonds. I'm the co-founder and executive director of Project Legacy. We started 10 years ago working as an after-school enrichment program. We've evolved to now serving about 100 youth every year. This year we have 30 young people who are in colleges across the country. Most of them were homeless at one time and are refugees or people of color. We also work intensively with referrals from probation, working on areas such as housing, mental health needs, treatment. We also work closely with workforce development. We do wraparound intensive case management and services to people who have been homeless, gang affiliated, or refugees. I'm going to stop now, and I'm going to let some of the youth speak who have been involved with the program.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Hi, my name is Alicia Carlisle. I've been a part of Project Legacy for about 4.5 years. Prior to joining Project Legacy, I was homeless. I'm now pursuing my bachelor's degree in social work, and I'm 7 credits away from being the first person in my family to receive a degree.
Hi, my name is Christina, and I've been in Project Legacy for about 17 months now. Before Project Legacy, I was just a junior in high school working 35 hours a week to help my mom with bills. But now I'm a senior who's actually going to graduate and attend college in the fall.
Okay. Okay. Hi, my name is Jamil. I've been with Project Legacy for like a little bit under a year, but I knew Karen for a long time. It's a good place to go as far as help. So you can become statistic-wise, they help you with assistance, you know, kind of guiding you away from trouble. Schooling, you know, they help you pay for GED testing. You know, it's a great program, and I like it. Thank you.
Jamil wasn't giving himself enough credit. He has almost completed his GED. He's completed a number of other programs this year, has a newborn daughter, and is employed and looking at starting college in the fall. we received funding from the state equity grant a year ago. Mayo Clinic has been instrumental in supporting us, and they continue to do that. I don't want to talk too much, so if there's questions, we'll just end here.
Thank you, Ms. Edmonds, for your testimony, and thank you all for showing up today and helping Representative Pearson with his bill. Are there any questions for the testifiers? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to comment, not so much a question, because I know Ms. Edmonds really pretty well, mm-hmm. and her program that's been just an incredible program in Rochester. And, I mean, I don't know if people really have the flavor of this from the short little presentation, because we hear a lot, you know, we hear a lot of similar kinds of things in this committee, but people need to understand that Karen and her husband started this just on their own, like, years ago, and just started working with the kinds of kids that everybody thinks are just lost, that, you know, that you, you know, nobody thinks that they have a future. And by intervening intensively, and Karen goes and seeks out these youth and talks to them and makes them feel that somebody cares, which I think is a really critical element of this. I mean, I just wish that you could really get a flavor. I hope you can, excuse me, from these young people that are here, but this is something that I just haven't really seen it anywhere else. And now I know that we hear the presentations in the committee and that we might not always understand the backstory of what we're seeing. But, you know, if Karen can make this a larger, if she can bring this to scale, whatever the scale is, it would just be an incredible benefit to our state. I mean, these are the young people that we can't afford to lose them. We just can't. So this is the kind of thing that, you know, we're all in this together. I know those people in this committee know this, and we can't afford to lose anybody. We need everybody together in our community, in our economy. We need these people to be successful. We, you know, this is not about them. It's about all of us. Mm-hmm. And so thank you, Karen, for being here and for doing the work that you've done for so many years.
Well said, Representative Liebling. Ms. Edmonds.
Yeah, I just want to add something. The kids that we're talking about, Alicia was homeless. She had no family support. She was going to an alternative learning center and just barely getting by. Alicia now has a 4.0 in the social work program. Most of our young people are on the dean's list when they go to college, and these are people who had a 1.8 or didn't graduate from high school and got a GED. So, as you said, there are lives that we're talking about here, and not just for them, but for our community. And what started as something just my husband and I doing 10 years ago, we're now part of Homeboy Industries. If any of you are familiar with Father Greg Boyle's work out in Los Angeles, the world's largest gang rehabilitation center. So for the past 5 years, we take youth out there. We receive technical support and programmatic assistance. Alicia's been out there 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going back again this August. So what started as a small program has really evolved to something that gets the support. We have Mayo psychiatrists and psychologists, pediatricians who are on our board, who are volunteering their services.
Thank you, Ms. Edmonds. Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions for the testifier? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your testimony this morning. We do now have quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. And I will move that House File 3734 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Now, Representative Pearson, we see the A18-0682 amendment. Do you wish for me to offer that amendment? I will move the A18-0682 amendment, Representative Pearson, to the amendment.
I had stated it in the initial part of this, where Project Legacy is now 501c3, and so we do not need the sponsorship of Olmsted County, and so that's why we can strike that.
All right. Are there any questions on the A18 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A18 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Any final questions for Representative Pearson?
No.
Final word, Representative Pearson.
I really couldn't say it better than those who testified in before me. I would only make one correction to the great statements that Representative Liebling made, in that she had said that these kids need to think someone cares about them, and if you know Karen Edmonds, you know that somebody cares about them. And so just really an amazing program that's doing fantastic work.
With that, Representative Pearson renews his motion that I will renew my motion that House File 3734, as amended, be voted for the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 3734, as amended, is re-reported to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Thank you, Representative Pearson. Up next, Representative Johnson, House File 3782. I'll move that House File 3782 be re-referred to the General Register. And House File 3782 has an A1 amendment. I will move the A1 amendment. Representative Johnson, we have the bill in front of us. Whenever you are ready, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I bring House File 3782 before you, dealing with some minor changes in the statutes dealing with provisional discharge. And I do have my testifier, Robin Benson, who will explain the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Benson. If you could please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson. My name is Robin Benson. I'm a Deputy General Counsel with the Minnesota Department of Human Services. For decades, Minnesota law has embodied a gradual continuum for the gradual reintegration of individuals committed as mentally ill and dangerous and as sex offenders for a safe, stable, secure return to society when appropriate. The recent Court of Appeals interpretation of the statute disrupts this continuum by effectively removing the segment of supervision from that continuum. House File 3782 restores the safe, secure continuum, clarifying Minnesota's commitment to this robust continuum. The additions and deletions in this bill reflect the state of the law before the Court of Appeals decision and embodies the constitutional requirements. The department worked with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office on this, and that office worked with other county attorneys to provide this amendment.
All right, are there any questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Johnson, to your bill as amended.
Again, I'll let the testifier explain it. It's rather technical. And
Mr. Benson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as noted previously, the additions and deletions in this bill carefully reflect the decades of constitutional interpretation and court law that existed prior to this January. They don't make it any harder or any easier for an individual to obtain full discharge. What it does is it ensures that that only occurs after a period of supervision in the community in which they have conditions that they have to abide by, that county agencies and the State Department of Human Services are in continual contact with them to ensure that they have a successful return to the community, because their success means a safe return to the community.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Are there any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 3782? Seeing none, are there any questions from members? Final word, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, committee, I do appreciate the time you give me to hear this. It's unfortunate that sometimes we have to make clarifications because of some issues that come up, and this is just getting the law back the way it was originally intended. Thank you.
With that, I'll renew my motion. House File 3782, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 3782, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Next, before I forget, Representative Cretia moves the minutes from March 21st, 2018. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes from March 21st, 2018, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. Next is House File 1031, Representative Tice.
Right under the bottom.
And Representative Tice moves that House File 1031 be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Regulatory Reform.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a DE that I would like to take up to get the bill in the form that I want it.
Representative Tice moves the DE1 amendment. Representative Tice, to your amendment.
This is still a bill in progress, but we are extremely close, so there's just a few minor changes. But this will get us closer, and at our next stop of commerce, we will have it the way we want. So I appreciate your support.
Are there any questions on the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Tice, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thanks for taking up 1031, the iCare Consumer Protection Bill. When we are done discussing the bill, Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 1031 as amended be referred to the General Register, but we're going to Commerce.
Yes.
First, I wanted to briefly put the bill and amendment in context. The purpose of 1031 is to better protect the eye health of consumers who are accessing online vision testing websites and apps in order to obtain prescriptions for contact lenses and glasses. Originally, the bill was meant to place some additional safeguards on this process. However, as you will see, my delete all amendment still moves the issue forward by advising consumers that online vision testing is not a substitute for comprehensive eye health examinations and that they should consult an optometrist or ophthalmologist. Mr. Chair, I could go into more detail, but due to the time constraints that we're under, I'll stop with my explanation and move for adoption. Forget this. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions on 1031 as amended.
All right. Is there anyone who wishes to testify in House File 1031? Seeing none, are there questions from members? Final word, Representative Tice.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill.
With that, I renew my motion. Representative Tice renews her motion that House File 1031, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Regulatory Reform. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 1031, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Commerce and Regulatory Reform. Next is House File 3291, Representative Anselmo. I move that House File 3291 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Anselmo has an A1 amendment. I will move the A1 amendment. Representative Anselmo, we have the bill in front of us. To your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and members. Welcome this morning. Introducing this morning House File 3291. I'd like to thank my co-authors who have been a part of this process, Chair Dean, Rep. Halverson, Rep. Friedberg, to name a few. My bill would provide funding for statewide tobacco cessation services. Last session, we had a bill that moved forward, and Chair Dean moved that through finance, and we're looking to move it to the next step here and get it past the committee process. Unfortunately, we reached a few of the roadblocks, the funding source with the governor, and we're hoping to resolve that with this amendment. In last year's bill, we didn't name the funding source, so this year we have. The Section 2 will outline the requirements and the services, which are essentially the same that we had last year. In fiscal year 17, Minnesota received $168 million in tobacco settlement fees. So that's going to be one of our sources. This is an important issue to me. It's an important issue to many people in our state. It's not some touchy-feely issue. It's about saving lives, healthcare dollars, and slowing up addiction. And it's a problem that's increasing, and we're hoping that we can find a way to stop that, and we'll let Molly give you some direct testimony on how we can do that.
All right, before we get to that, are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Molly Moylanen, and I work for Clearway, Minnesota. I also co-chair Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation. We're a statewide coalition dedicated to reducing tobacco's harm caused by commercial tobacco. Today also happens to be at our day at the Capitol, so many of you will meet with constituents who will support this bill along with some other priorities. Our coalition partners include the American Cancer Society, the Heart Association, the Lung Association, the Indigenous Peoples Task Force, the African American Leadership Foundation, North Point, the Mayo Clinic, and the Minnesota Medical Association. Clearway Minnesota is an independent, nonprofit organization funded with 3% of Minnesota's tobacco settlement. We were established as a life-limited organization, and we will sunset by 2022. Since 2001, we have operated Quit Plan Services. These are effective, science-based programs that give Minnesota tobacco users free tools to quit. Quit Plan Services include phone counseling, medications, emails, text messaging, and other self-help materials. Quit Plan has provided more than 170,000 Minnesotans with quit smoking help. Last year, over 15,000 Minnesotans enrolled, and thousands more contacted us for basic information on cessation. Quit Plan will end in early 2020. This bill ensures Minnesota's commitment to tobacco cessation remains after Quit Plan Services ends. All other states provide cessation services. If the legislature does not take action, Minnesota will become the only state not to provide these services. Over the last 20 years, Minnesota has seen great progress in reducing youth and adult smoking overall, but high rates persist in many vulnerable populations. We know that nearly 600,000 Minnesotans still smoke, and the majority want to quit. The good news is, helping people quit is one of the most cost-effective health services. The timing for this service is really critical now to avoid any gaps in cessation coverage for those who need it. It's kind of like a track relay. When you hand off the baton, the runner in front of you has to start running to match your speed for a smooth and effective handoff as you slow down. I assure you that we are continuing to innovate and serve Minnesotans the best we can until our very end. Just this week, we launched an American Indian Quit Line that was developed under the leadership of a remarkable team of American Indians and organizations that serve the community, like the American Indian Cancer Foundation. This service will not only be available here in Minnesota, but eventually to all states that use our same vendor. It's been our honor helping people quit commercial tobacco for Quit Plan Services, and it's in all Minnesotans' best interest for this work to continue because it saves money and lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the work that you're doing. And kind of talk about smooth handoff and getting up to the same speed, and just talking about how we're doing right now, you know, what's our split time when we're handing this thing off in terms of how are we actually doing? Are we measuring the metrics of how many people are quitting? And then you mentioned where we have specific problems where we have high incidence of smoking in different populations around the state, geographies around the state. Demographics, younger people, and folks, are we measuring that? Does the money that we're spending measuring that so that Representative Anselmo can continue to convince me that this isn't just a touchy-feely, feel-good, do-gooder MPR deal?
Ms. Moyanon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Dean. Yes, through Quit Plan Services, we have had a robust evaluation program in place since the beginning where we're able to measure quit rates and really look at that over time to measure our progress. And the bill that would now really turn that over to the Department of Health hopefully would continue that robust evaluation.
Chair Dean.
Thanks, and we would love to see the, I'm sure you have the reports available on your data, and that'd be great to see for the committee.
Absolutely.
Before we move it on to the next step. Thanks.
Yeah, just a little one follow-up on that, Mr. Chair and Chair Dean. Yes, our quit rates are very consistent, if not above the national averages, because we've taken really, you know, great strides to make sure that our quitting services are the best they can be. But yes, we can follow up with specific data on that.
Are there any other questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Moylan, and thanks for all the work that you've done over the years on this. I mean, I think this committee knows how important all of this is. But I just wondered if you could give us a little brief history of the tobacco settlement and how much money came to the state and what happened to all that. What was supposed to happen? I mean, I know that, part of that, as you described, funded the activities up to this point. But How much money was it, and how much is left? I know this isn't the Finance Committee, but just can you give us that quick history?
Ms. Moylanin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Liebling. I will give just a brief overview, but I know others in the room probably have deeper history with it as well, so they can feel free to chime in. The initial settlement with the tobacco industry was about $6 billion, and of that, 3%, about $200 million, was dedicated to the standalone nonprofit, which then became Clearway Minnesota. All the other dollars then flow through the legislature, the balance of that $6 billion, and that was initially invested in some foundations and some other health-based programming, like Target Market is one of the most well-known programs that came out of that. Well, at that time, then all those dollars were reabsorbed, and I don't think any of that really is left for health or tobacco prevention or cessation. Now, ongoing, the state receives, well, last year was $168 million in ongoing tobacco settlement fees from that, from the tobacco settlement, and every year that will continue. So those ongoing tobacco settlement payments go into the general fund, and what this bill would do is take a sliver of that and dedicate it to smoking cessation.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Ms. Moylanin. I mean, that's really helpful because, you know, this $6 billion, you said, billion with a B, right? That's a lot of money. And, at least one would think, I don't recall what year that was. Maybe you could tell me what year was that we got the settlement?
Ms. Moylanin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that was 1999.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
98.
So,
thank you.
1998. Okay. Well, so we're talking 20 years, and we still got people smoking, and we've gone a long way, but it just shows you how, the power of the industry and the power of the addiction. And we still got a ways to go, so it sure makes a lot of sense to take some money and keep it going. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. This is a great bill. I'm a co-author of it. Just like I mentioned, there is also another bill out there in case members want to know. Another, as part of the tax bill last year, we cut the tobacco tax, and I wasn't a fan of that proposal in that bill. Just one of the clearest ways to keep smoking rates low is to have a tax high that discourages people from starting to smoke and encourages quit attempts, which this bill will help get at. But I have a bill to reinstate that, and the funding would go to tobacco prevention and cessation. So if people happen to be looking for an alternative, a way to supplement the funding that this bill would provide, I'd encourage you to take a look at that bill also. But thank you. I appreciate both of your work on this. This is a really important issue, and we've seen tobacco rates go up, so I'm really glad to see this.
Representative Grisham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, to the representative. How does the legalized marijuana movement help or hurt this tobacco cause?
Ms. Polianin, Representative Ensemble.
Mr. Chair, Grisha, I'll let the Molly handle that question there.
Ms. Polianin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grisha, clearly Minnesota does not have a position on legalized marijuana either way. What we would be most focused on, if that were the case, was to continue to make sure that clean indoor air is protected and so that we are able to uphold the clean indoor air and the standard that Minnesotans really enjoy and expect.
Representative Grisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not asking if you support it. I'm just asking how does it help that you have a bill here talking about reducing tobacco and cessation movements. Does more people smoking marijuana or inhaling marijuana help or hurt that cause?
Ms. Moylanin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crescia, I don't have a good answer to that question. I don't know. I don't know the literature and the interaction, so I don't feel like I'm able to answer that question.
Thank you, Ms. Molina.
Just one follow-up.
Representative Crescia.
So to the bill author, does it help or hurt?
Representative Anselmo.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Crescia, I think smoking anything is a bad idea. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Crescia, since I'm the author of a bill to legalize cannabis for personal use, I think maybe I should weigh in on that a little bit. You know, we're not making smoking tobacco illegal. And I think the issue, I don't know the precise answer to the question that you asked, whether smoking cannabis, what the interaction with that is with smoking tobacco. But I will tell you this. There is a lot of harm being done to people in Minnesota because smoking cannabis is criminal. That's because of the prohibition of cannabis. And that's really the issue. We try to get at smoking of tobacco, not by criminalizing it, but by trying to do harm reduction and so on. I don't think most people who are, like, certainly I, as a proponent of decriminalizing or actually deprohibiting cannabis, I in no way say that cannabis is safe or wonderful, that everybody should do it. That's really not the issue. But I think that many of the people who want to decriminalize it, there are a number of reasons why it would be better for Minnesota to get rid of the prohibition for adults, not for children. And, you know, we should, but if we did that, we would still need to continue to work on some of the issues around cannabis. Because there are some people for whom it isn't safe and some people who should not be using it, even adults. But, you know, we need to deal with that as a health issue and not as a criminal issue. So that's really the big push behind this, that the prohibiting cannabis has many bad impacts, just like you could go and look back at prohibition of alcohol. Alcohol is a legal substance for adults. And yet we in this committee certainly know about a lot of the really bad impacts from that drug. And yet we don't criminalize it because we know we've tried that in this country and it had worse effects than the drug itself. So that just kind of lays out a little bit of the issue here. So just to be really clear, the people who, like me, who are proposing that we remove the prohibition on cannabis are not saying that it's safe for everybody and that everyone should use it. It's simply a question of how we as a state should deal with it, not telling people they should use it.
Does anyone have any questions on the bill? Seeing none, Ms. Molianen, thank you for your testimony. Representative Freiberg.
Well, thank you. I was just going to say the bill has absolutely nothing to do with issues related to marijuana. I mean, the bill is talking about statewide tobacco cessation services, and the word tobacco appears throughout the bill. The word marijuana appears nowhere in here. I mean, tobacco is a product that has been specifically manufactured to be deliberately addictive, and when it's used the way it's intended, it kills people. It's one of the only consumer products out there that you can say that about. So there's a need for cessation services to help people overcome this. Quitting smoking is one of the hardest things anybody can possibly do, and there's a need for it because this is a product that's been the nicotine levels in it has been manufactured specifically to keep people addicted to it. You know, the whole issue of marijuana is completely unrelated to that. This bill doesn't have anything to do with it. And furthermore, recreational marijuana is illegal currently in this state. So if at some point it becomes legal to use marijuana, then I'm sure there will be lots of public health issues that need to be discussed about that. If Representative Crescia is supportive of legalizing marijuana, I mean, that's something that's news to me. Pretty interesting, frankly, but, you know, obviously, if at some point that does happen, I'm sure there'll be lots of public health issues that need to be discussed about that, but this bill doesn't have anything to do with that. This is strictly about tobacco, which is a deadly and addictive product and requires cessation to help people get off of it.
Final word on this rabbit hole, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, on a bit of
folks, I didn't try to get people's dander up. It's a serious question. We're talking about cessation efforts. I don't care on the position one way or the other. I'm asking, we have a bill author up here who's very much into trying to reduce tobacco rates. I asked about something that may be related to that. I don't care whether I'm not here to debate the other issue. That was not, my question was, are there other activities that lead us to people doing tobacco usage? That's what I'm trying to get to. If our goal is trying to reduce tobacco rates and get people off addictions, I think we should know all of the things. I would ask the same thing with smokeless tobacco and other ones. My question was never to go down a rabbit hole. It was to seriously help the bill author in his attempts, because I know he's very serious about this, of reducing smoking among young people so that it doesn't go into adult. I apologize if you're sensitive on another issue. I didn't mean to bring that germaneness in. But I think that if we can't debate policy and bring up all the ancillary things that may be related to that, it's a sad statement. So if you guys want to take it that way, that was not my intention.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 3291? Seeing none, are there questions for the bill author? Final word, Representative Anselmo.
I'd like to thank the committee and all the great questions. I can't believe I'm not on this committee. It's so exciting. I do want to remind people why this is important. And, you know, it's about addiction. It's about an awful sort of, you know, disease, which is what happened. $7 billion in lost, well, in cost to the state of Minnesota, $4 billion in productivity, $3 billion in actual costs. So it's something we need to slow down. In some ways, stop. There's other ways to do this. This is the way we're taking. I appreciate your time. I think my advice is not to smoke anything, just to sip things. Thank you.
With that, I guess I'll renew my motion that House File 3291 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Enjoy this one, Chair Dean. All those in favor of House File 3291 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and House File 3291 is referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Next up, Representative Zerwas, House File 4112. I will move that House File 4112 be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Zerwas, we have the bill in front of us. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 4112 clarifies existing regulation and puts into law existing practice related to fluoroscopy operations. It allows cardiovascular technologists, also known as CVTs, who have met educational and training requirements to perform fluoroscopy operation. CVTs are not required to obtain fluoroscopy training, but many facilities provide this education and training to their CVTs. Accordingly, Minnesota has long permitted CVTs with fluoroscopy training to perform these operations absent clear statutory authority to do so. This bill provides further clarity. Both the regulator and facilities requesting the change and support the language, I know of no known opposition.
All right. Is there anyone who wishes to testify in House File 4112? Seeing none, are there questions from members? Final word, Representative Zerwas.
What happened when you have a bill that doesn't deal with smoking? I'm done.
With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 4112 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and House File 4112 is re-referred to the General Register. Next on the agenda is House File 4094, Representative Franzen.
Welcome in. All right, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Happy Tuesday. In front of us, we have a bill that comes from...
Representative Franzen moves House File 4094 to be re-referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. Representative Franzen, please give a brief explanation of your bill.
Well, good morning, Representative Archer Grunhagen. What a lovely surprise. So this bill here comes from the great city of Alexandria, the city that is easy to get to and hard to leave. And I have along to my right my constituent, Lynn Barton. So this is her bill. And all licensed family child care providers have to take the mandatory classes, like SIDS and supervision for training and child growth and development, et cetera, et cetera. And there is frustration in a dual role served as trainer and licensed care provider. Not only do they have to pay to take the classes to be eligible to train and learn the curriculum, but they also have to pay to take a class from another trainer. So here she is to testify on behalf of her bill.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Barton. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Barton. I've been a family child care provider in Alexandria for 20 years, and the last 5 years I've also served as a dual role as a trainer. When the mandatory trainings increased, I looked around my community and saw that there were not many trainers available, and I started the process of becoming a trainer. And I can get into that in more detail if you want, but one of the classes that I started training was the Safe Sleep, the Center on Expected Infant Death and Abusive Head Trauma class, and that is a DHS-developed curriculum, and I had to apply to take the class from DHS to train their curriculum. And this has been, you know, we've saved a lot of babies, I think, by bringing that class forward. But at the same time, I can go out and train that class, you know, 4-6 times a year, but I have to go and take the training from somebody else, as it is. And as I was, you know, exploring, you know, trying to stay awake sitting through the same class, the exact same training that I teach, and trying to keep awake, I'm like, there's, you know, this is kind of silly. And so I was doing some investigating, and, you know, every profession that has to do continuing ed hours gets credit for, you know, being a trainer or a mentor. Except for, you know, the family child care providers. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating to me. So I contacted, you know, my representative, and I'm hoping that you can help me today. If you have any more questions, I certainly can answer them for you. But I'd ask that you, you know, consider giving the child care providers and the trainers that serve dual roles credit for the work that they do.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, members, questions for the testifier or Representative Franson? Oh, Representative Lieberly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I think this the concept that you're bringing forward makes a lot of sense, and I'm just thinking I'm an attorney, and under the attorney, we have continuing education requirements. For me, since I mostly am a legislator, not an attorney, there, most of them don't relate to me and what I do, but that's a sort of an aside. But one of the things they do allow attorneys to do is if you're doing a training course, if you're teaching one, you get credit for your preparation to teach it. Kind of under the theory that you're learning, when you get ready to teach something, you're learning it. Right? And you're learning it probably better than anybody. So I hear you on this. I think it's a good idea. I do have a little concern about the way the thing is, the way the bill is worded, and whether exactly what the intention is here. So, you know, I certainly think that if you're teaching a course, you shouldn't have to go get the credits by listening to somebody else teach it. That, no question, and I think that's what the testifier described. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if under this language, if you would be able to, it doesn't seem to limit it at all, so that it seems like you could count no matter how many times, say you taught the course 8 times, would you be able to count that as 4 hours of credit under this bill?
Ms. Barton?
Mr. Chair? If you look, family child care providers are very specific in the types of training they have to take. So, like, the sudden unexpected infant death would only, you know, if I train that one, it would only give credit for me in that topical area. You also have to take classes in active supervision and
child development and different classes, so you would only get credit in that topical area for the training that you do. If that makes sense, does that answer your question?
Representative Lieberman?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad to hear that. That makes, you know, I like that idea. Or the area. Okay, so I just want to make sure that the language of the bill, let's see, I'm not as so familiar with this. So how many hours do you have to take? Let's see, it says you've got 16 hours of training a year, and let's see, do you have a certain number of hours in each of the categories that you have to take, or is it just 16 hours distributed among those training areas?
Ms. Barton?
Mr. Chair? Representative Liebling, if you look down in like 1.18, it talks a little bit more about the, you know, the different areas. And yes, there are specific. You have to have. It's really quite complex, actually. you have to have your. And it's not every year that you have to have the classes, like the sign unexpected infant death. You only have to have it in a face-to-face every other year. On the off years, you have to watch a video. On the supervising for safety, you have to have 2 to 4 hours. And so there's a specific amount of hours in each category as it's broke down.
Representative Lieberman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thanks. So I think that's, you know, definitely getting at the concern. So thanks, Mr. Chair. I wonder if we could have the department come down and just say.
Is someone here from the department to answer any questions? Please come down and introduce yourself. And Representative Liebling has a question or comment for you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deb Swanson-Klatt. I'm a manager with the Child Development Services Unit at the Department of Human Services.
Well, thank you, and welcome to the committee, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for coming down. So obviously you've been listening to the discussion. I just wondered what the department's view of this is. It makes a lot of sense to me that somebody's teaching in a certain area for other child care providers that they shouldn't have to then go and take the course themselves. Does that make sense to the department, and do you read the bill as being correctly worded to accomplish that?
The department, I think, would be in support of the concept of the bill as well. We are interested in providing some technical assistance to the bill author, And I think it would be along the lines of providing help in addressing some of the issues that you're raising. We'd be happy to talk further.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Franson, so is it your plan to kind of work with the language a little bit to make sure that it, you know, work with the department? I mean, what's the plan going forward here?
The plan, Representative Liebling, is to make sure that you're happy when this bill gets to the House floor.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I didn't know I was so powerful, Representative Hansen, but glad to know that. So, well, I just hope that I just want this to work for everybody. And so, you know, I hope that going forward it will, because obviously we don't want to make people jump through silly hoops just to jump through them. We definitely want to get rid of any of that we can. And so, you know, I hope the department will work really hard with the author and try to make this something that we can all pass and feel good about. Thanks.
Okay, there's another question. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Franzen, for bringing this forward and to testify for also, I think, looking at what I would call a small fix in some of the CE requirements that providers need to go through, and I just wanted to make a comment. So thank you for your comments, Representative Liebling, because, you know, we do want to make sure this works for people. But I wanted to share, since some of you weren't on the Subcommittee of Child Care Access and Affordability, that we did have quite a bit of testimony from providers talking about the onerous and sometimes redundant continuing education requirements, and I think it's something that if we can't get anything more done this session, it's something we should look at ongoing. Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, any final comments, Representative Franson?
Nope. Thank you for your time this morning.
Okay. Representative Franson renews her motion that HF 4094 be re-referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the HF 4094 is referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. The next bill on the agenda is HF 3778. Representative Peterson moves HF 3778 be referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. When you are ready, Representative Peterson, please give us a brief explanation of your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a little bit like deja vu because this bill is just like House File 3205 that you heard yesterday. However, it's just another way that it can get funded. So we just want to keep all of our options on the table. And just for your recollection of 3205, which is also 3778, it defines a homeless person, and it's really actually to help people who may be homeless transition into resources that are available to them, and it also looks at the provider rate increase. As you may recall, the providers are getting paid at 25% of 2011 rates, and it's time to update that survey so that they get a quarter of 2018 rates, so it's looking at that issue, and the portability pool changes as well. So not to be redundant from yesterday, that's basically the summation of the bill, but we want to make sure that we're utilizing any resources, whether they're federally or otherwise, make sure that we can do something for these families.
Thank you, Representative Peterson, for that explanation. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, members, any questions for Representative Peterson? Seeing none, any final comments, Representative Peterson?
Thank you.
Okay, with that, Representative Peterson renews her motion that HF 3778 be re-referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And HF 3778 is re-referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Okay, with that, members, we're ready to adjourn. This concludes this hearing. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 27th at 8:15 a.m. in room 200.